This is Betsy Tulloch, and you are listening to Superman and Lois and Pals.
Superman and Lois and Pals. I'm your host, Henry Bernstein. And alongside me is my favorite super pal, Professor Sam Brody, here in my home. We have been doing this podcast for 4 years and we've never spoken face to face in a recorded way.
It's a little weird.
It's weird, right?
It's weird.
I've slept in your childhood bedroom surrounded by your comics. You've been in my home before, but we've never officially talked about Superman on the record.
We've never done the podcast here.
So welcome. We just minutes ago got home from Superman 2025. Is it a little weird just calling it Superman? I feel like there needs to be a qualifier.
I always call Superman the movie Superman 78.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm going to call this Superman
2025. Okay. Yeah. I've been saying Superman and then like pausing and then saying 2025. Maybe that's too much.
Yeah.
So let's do, we talked a little bit in the car ride home, but give me like a few takeaways of positives, things that you liked about this movie.
I think the characterization was great. In particular, I thought Lois Lane was perfect.
Yeah.
Completely perfect.
Yeah.
I thought that the characterization of Clark and Superman was pretty good. The only thing that keeps me from saying that it was perfect is that it was like, I thought, so it's hard to frame this as a complaint, but like, they made him a dork, which I thought was pretty good. They made him a little cheesy, perfect. But part of that, I think, turned up the dial on goofiness, maybe just one tick.
Too much.
Above where, like, I'm not messing around, I'm doing important stuff. It's like, just one, like, I think there are times that he can be a stick in the mud too and not be too funny. Now, I'm not saying that I like the Snyder characterization better. That's like way too far in the other direction. But I guess I thought that, the earnestness was good, and the like just straightforwardness was good.
So thumbs up or thumbs down to Corin Sweat?
Thumbs up, Corin Sweat. Yeah. Corin Sweat did an amazing job.
Great.
I thought he was great.
Less. We've been waiting because so we talked beforehand and I asked you like what are like the top five things that will make this a good movie? And I think, and you said, to paraphrase you, that Lex Luthor can't be weird. And you didn't mean the movie weird. Mm-hmm. You meant like it has to make sense why he's doing the things he's doing. So how did you feel about Nicholas Holt's Lex Luthor? The kind of last chance at a straight from the comics movie Lex Luthor.
So it was, I think, easily my favorite movie, Lex Luthor. It's a little bit unfair to compare to Michael Rosenbaum because that was years of development.
Yeah, I think we're talking movies.
Right. Yeah.
Michael Rosenbaum sort of had his own, carved his own thing.
Right. Yeah. And so, him and Clancy Brown are my favorite, like, moving picture Lex Luthors. But I think this was, as a movie one, it was pretty easy to be the best, and so this cleared a low bar. What I would have liked maybe was something that we didn't get, which was that we didn't really get any kind of private scenes with him. He's always managing his team. So there was really no moment where you get to really
like him over the sink looking menacingly at a mirror or something.
And it's not like there's really ever anyone he tells the truth to. And so you just have to trust that when he delivers his motivations in a room full of people that he's giving his real motivations. And I think that is what Gunn wanted you to think. Although to me, that was a little bit like, a little bit like unsatisfying in the sense that for a while I was very happy that it seemed like he was only trying to kill Superman in the service of some other goal. And then they literally
Mm.
gave him a line where he said, I
I'm doing the
actually, the other goal
opposite.
was in the service of killing you. And I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
Because that's, the comic book motivation is the villain just wants to kill the hero because he hates him and he's evil and he likes.
I agree with you in that there was something that they didn't quite get perfectly with Luthor. I think it's actually there's something about Lex Luthor that actually to me feels a little ineffable. Like there's something like in your Kishkas that like it's hard to pin down what that thing is because it's a combination of the jealousy, the xenophobia, the power. It's all of it. And so to get all of those right, I think it's hard to do. For some reason, it only works by in the comics, as established by John Byrne and continued on basically since then, that version of Lex. So I think this was about the closest we got to it. What did you think? I was wondering what you thought about, I want to get to the Superman speech at the end too, but Lex, Lex has the last word, kind of. Well, Krypto has the last word, but Lex is basically like, "Oh, come off it, don't patronize me," and then gives his little like sort of last gasp of speech, sharing his motivations. What did you think about that? Did you think it was like too much at that point, or?
So I just, I was wondering how much, because I felt like there was a little dance that was happening. And you could see a glimpse of it in the 1 second that they gave to Maxwell Lord, where he said conservatives and liberals
Sean
are
Gunn,
bad, and
James Gunn's
agreed,
brother.
right,
Yeah.
that Lex Luthor sucks. And
Yeah.
so I did get the sense that, and like you said, with the monkeys writing the social media post,
Yeah.
I got the sense that what was being done in awareness of the political environment, trying to walk a certain kind of a tightrope, not to push all of the buttons. Right, so the quote unquote controversies that have happened in the last few weeks were because of things Gunn said in interviews, not because of things that are
Yeah,
in the
there's
movie,
the movie is actually quite
right?
silly. It really doesn't take
Right,
itself too seriously.
and
Yeah.
yes, Lex says several times, he's an alien. Like
Right.
I hate him because he's an alien, but like it's not played up the way that it was in season 5 of Supergirl or
No,
whatever.
right.
It's not nearly the top line. Story in the movie. So basically, I think Gunn was not trying to push a lot of political buttons, which to me means that he had to be thinking, how do I write Lex Luthor in 2025 without making him seem like Elon Musk?
But he
With,
did seem
without,
like
without
Elon.
making him seem like Peter
Yeah.
Thiel. I mean, because these people are insane.
Right.
Like, just like him in
But
a way,
you
right?
thought
Like,
you, I mean, it came across that Lex was insane. Was
I'm
like,
not sure.
really? You think part of it is a maybe a
Well,
manipulate?
so the megalomania
Yeah, he
obviously
was
came across,
maniacal.
right?
Yeah.
But like it's so hard to do in a world in which we have this like one billionaire who's seems entirely motivated by the idea of settling Mars, and this other
Right.
billionaire who is all in on post-humanism and
Right.
doesn't actually care if the human species mostly dies as long as we can. As long as he can digitally upload his consciousness before that
Wh
happens,
which one is that?
that's Teal,
Oh, okay.
right? It's just like all of this weird post-humanity, like ex lifespan extension, all this like I really actually does not care if the human species makes it, and like in a world like that, to write a Lex Luthor who doesn't just seem like exactly like those people, but is a comic book character, must have been hard.
Yeah,
So yeah,
but I think he also wants it to feel like a comic book character. This movie,
Right.
Brandon Bernstein from my other podcast said to me that he really liked that he really liked that this movie wasn't afraid to be a comic book movie. And I liked that too. I hadn't thought about that in that way. But like kind of from like the get-go, like as you're sitting in the car on the way here, that there's no real act one setting stuff up. It just you're there in Metropolis, or at the fortress, I guess. And I kind of like that it was it felt different. Like,
Yes, I mean, so some of the I tried to avoid spoilers and I successfully avoided spoilers, but I almost kind of feel like there wasn't much that could have been spoiled. Like a dimensional rift opens, like is a plot point that I guess could have been spoiled for me, but wasn't. But like
I think the big twists were like the clone at the end, although I'm pretty sure, I mean, I kind of called it in my mind.
Well, yeah, right.
You could have
So,
called that, like,
right. The fact that the character is called Ultraman.
yeah, that's a nod to Earth 3,
I mean,
and
maybe when he goes through the black hole, he winds up in Earth 3. If they get
right,
him
and he
back
will
in
be
another
Earth 3.
movie, and he'll be the crime syndicate,
Right.
you know, whatever. So, but my point was that, like, the few reviews that I read that were mainly that didn't have spoilers in them, the negative ones that I saw sort of captions of or whatever, tended to use phrases like overstuffed and mess. And I didn't feel that way at all, because to me, it was just like, you open a comic book into a universe and there's just this all this weird stuff happening. You're like, who's the engineer? Well, you know, 20 issues ago, the engineer did a thing and then Lex Luthor hired her and like
And it'll be
whatever.
explained in a box in a caption at the top of that panel.
And I can imagine someone who is just like a movie critic, whose job is to judge a movie both on its own terms and in comparison to other movies. And in a way, this is like not in that, it just doesn't cooperate with that. It really was comic booky in that sense. So, because I'm used to that, it didn't feel messy to me or overstuffed to me. It just felt like comic booky.
It reminded, I thought of two things during those like big Metropolis fight scenes. It reminded me, and this, I'm saying this as a compliment, of first of all, just opening a comic to a splash page. And like, it's sort of like when Superman or, when the pan out, like sort of crane shot where you're seeing the back of the hammer of Boravia at the beginning, and then he blasts that building. That's a splash page. That would be a 2-page spread, with that. The caption that was on WGBS News would be in the comics, and so I really like that. It also reminded me of, do you remember those two issues of Superman? I believe both were, one was Man of Steel and one was a crossover with the Milestone Universe. But the covers, you could put stick on the little guys. It was like a full pan, like a full double page spread of Metropolis. One was his fight with Lobo, and Lobo came to Metropolis. And that's what it felt like. They were just, here was the canvas of Metropolis, and he was just kind of putting these guys here and there on there. And I like that.
Yeah, it was sort of like what they would never do. If you remember the pre-MCU era of superhero movies, when everything was like completely self-contained and nothing ever referred to anything, and often comic book fans would go see movies and be like disappointed that they were always missing
Yeah, I
things.
mean, it's the
Like,
25th anniversary today as we're recording this, or maybe it was yesterday, of X-Men. And while X-Men did a lot of amazing things for bringing comic books into the movies, like literally having the opening scene being Magneto crushing the gates of Auschwitz, which I thought I would never see it on in a movie, and it's kind of haven't seen since in that brave of a scene. But like, they're all dressed in black and like black leather, and like, I don't
Like,
know.
where's Rogue and
Where
where's Gambit?
Right, why is Rogue playing the part of Kitty Pryde? And like, yeah, so it was like really cool stuff, but it like just wasn't quite enough. But this, you're
You
saying
just
this.
think about Batman 89 and like there's just it's just world unto itself.
Batman 89 is one street. The
Right,
whole movie's
yeah.
on one street. I
Exactly.
love
There's
Batman
no, I mean,
89.
it's a great movie, but like it's not, they got three movies in with no Robin, right? And then like
And then
they
like
rebooted
hit
the
you over
whole
the head with
thing
the rest of it.
immediately, right? And then I don't know. So this was like the opposite. They were just like,
Here's everything.
yeah, here's everything.
Here's the Maxwell Lord Justice League International. Here's
I missed Booster Gold or something.
Well, I think we're gonna get a Booster and Beetle, Blue Beetle
That
thing.
would be great.
I think that's what's gonna happen. Let's talk about the Justice Gang for a second. So first of all, Nathan Fillion was chewing the scenery. And I think he was really having fun playing an asshole.
He was
Usually he's
having
such a nice guy.
Well, I remember his villain on Buffy. That
Of
was like,
course, of course, yes. But I think most people, remember him for his other nice guy things. But yeah, of course he was a villain on Buffy. So I think that was really fun. I don't know. I kind of felt like those characters, it didn't bother me they were there. There was some dialogue and stuff happening that I would have preferred if I was the second time I was watching it. I was like, well, Jimmy and Ron Troop could have said that, or Perry could have said that. Like, there was just some expositional, conversational Clark Superman stuff that could have I don't know. That, just the, like it, the one, you know, as I said on the way over here, like my one of my nitpicks was not enough Daily Planet. Like they did a great job of the two scenes that they showed of the Daily Planet. I wanted more of that. And I felt like some of that time was spent on the Justice Gang, who were fun, and it was cool to see more superheroes. And I like that they're not pretending there aren't any other superheroes. But I don't know. It felt like more Justice Gang was at the expense of other characters. What did you think about the Justice
So, I
League?
mean, it's sort of a double-edged sword. It's like what you said before. It's they're giving you the world that already exists, like there's no exposition. So to me, there is no way that the Green Lantern Corps, that Guy Gardner was their first choice on Earth, right? Like
Right. No, for sure.
we need an explanation of why it's Guy Gardner,
Right.
right? We need to like, but and
Oh,
the
he's being
movie,
punished by the Green Lantern Corps for sure.
like we, but the movie's not interested in telling us, right? So instead, it's just funny that Guy Gardner is there. But right, immediately the question is raised, like, where is John
And
Stewart?
where's Hal Jordan?
Where's Hal Jordan? And so, and the same thing with Hawkgirl, like, is she Thanagarian or is she not?
Yeah, is
Like,
she
what
Egyptian?
is she Shi'ara or is she
Is she just a
Kindra? Like,
right?
what's
Well, I
happening?
mean, okay, first of all, the Hawkman, Hawkgirl origins and past is so messed up that like
It's wait,
good
it
luck.
would have taken 15 minutes to explain Hawkgirl, and so it's fine that they didn't do it, but that's also that's the flip side of just like having these characters. So I agree with you. I would have liked to see more breathing room for the characters we really care about. I feel that, like, for example, when Clark wakes up and he's in the Kent's house, they cut to him sitting outside and having his breakfast. To me, there was a huge missed opportunity for a scene with Lois and the Kents at the table with Ma showing her a photo album or something like that, and just getting some nice character beats in. And like the same thing with the Daily Planet, like Cat Grant gets like a few amusing lines when she's like trying to get Lois to talk to her and Lois is not paying attention. But like, you know,
She's not
there's
really Cat, other than
right
the look, and
there, we needed more
she's
to
not
add it,
interviewing a celebrity.
right?
She's not flirting with Clark.
Right. So in that sense, again, it really felt like you were in a story arc, and this was like the conclusion of what had been a 5 or 6 issue arc, and we only get the end.
But in the comics, people jump in at random times all the time. You know, like one of my first Superman comics in the Triangle era was the reveal to Lois, you know, because that cover grabbed me. And so I had to go back and learn about who all those people. Can I tell you one cute moment though, I saw with Judah the other day? So we're reading, I don't know if I told you this, we started with Byrne, John Byrne, Man of Steel number one, a few months ago. And we're already well into, we're halfway through the fourth, like, hardcover collection of the Triangle
Are you
era.
reading it out loud?
Yeah, we're reading out loud. And so we're sitting in the movie, and that scene of the Daily Planet shows up, and Judah goes, "Oh, there's Kat." And I'm like, "Oh, my son knows who Cat Grant is because we're reading the comics." So it was just like, yeah, it was just like so great. We oh yeah, we I'll tell you where we are, exactly where we are. We just read Action Comics 600, where Superman kind of crosses the line a little bit close. Oh yeah, here, right here, where he crosses the line. And but yeah, anyway, it was just a great moment that I appreciated. Like, it does, pays off. There's something I wanted to say about the Smallville scene. So, I'm a big mark for the Kents, and I love a universe in which the Kents are alive. Both of them, I need both of them alive. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. That was one of the things I was disappointed that in the first, I understood, you know, as the series went on, I understood why. But and then the first episode, both Jonathan and Martha die. And I think that these actors did a marvelous job, and they definitely did enough to show what kind of relationship. And the whole movie is about that one scene. I mean, that's sort of the movie is about, I think, Clark's humanity, and they kind of hit you over the head with it. And like, they're very obvious about the fact that like that message from Jor-El Mara is not the real message. They're not his real parents. His real parents are the Kents. And you know, the moment of Jonathan saying it's not a parent's job to tell to tell you what to do. It's to give you the tools. All good stuff. I wanted more. I wanted not only that Lois scene with them, because all she says is, "Hi, I'm Lois." I wanted with the with the showing her the photo album for sure. I even wanted Clark getting up and taking off the suit and putting on that robe. Just a little more humanity at the Kent farm, because that's like sort of where he's himself. And I think eating cereal barefoot definitely felt like that's who he was. So yes, I think that the things that I wanted more of, I'm not sure. The movie would have been 2.5 hours, I think. And I think James Gunn did not want to make a 2.5 hour movie. I appreciate him for that, because one of my biggest nitpicks at movies, especially superhero movies, are superhero movies that are over 2 hours. And here at 2 hours and 9 minutes, some of the critiques I read was that it felt like the scenes were cut off, and that like there was more building. So maybe, there is a bigger, there are more scenes there, like you said.
Yeah, and I this is the worst nitpick ever.
Oh, it's
But when they
okay.
showed the Kent house, they didn't show the barn, did they?
I think the pullout shot showed the barn.
Okay, so I just feel like typically you see the house and the barn together. And the house is usually like a more of a farmhouse looking house. This was more of like a suburban looking house that happened to be in the middle of nowhere, which I thought was kind of weird. But like I felt like I missed the like when he's awake in the morning, Pa Kent should already be awake doing something and you should go help him. Doesn't matter what it is. He could be milking the cows or he could be like threshing or
And they don't even have
something.
to say anything. It's just understood.
Yeah,
That's what you do.
you just goes out, you should go help
Yeah.
him.
Again, I think that was one of those things, Sam, like you said, that like we're to understand that that has already
Yes,
happened,
of
and
course.
that maybe on the road we'll see more of that.
I have a deeper issue that you might want to talk about.
Lay it on me.
Okay. And that is the issue of the villainy of the Kryptonian
Oh,
parents,
let's talk about
right?
that. I actually really, really want to talk about it.
So here's the thing,
Okay,
right?
so
Like,
how did you? So what you're talking about is, it is revealed that the twist in the first half an hour, 20 minutes, is that Jor-El and Lara's full message to Superman isn't just that you should be a symbol of hope and help people, but that you're to dominate the Earth and quite savagely. And so I personally don't like that version of Jor-El and Lara.
I will say that I think I have never liked the movie Jor-El ever. I didn't like they can be a good people they wish to be, they only lack a light to show the way. F you, Jor-El.
How do
This is
you?
the same attitude. It's just taken in a more extreme direction.
Well,
And
I mean, Donner is doing a God Jesus
yeah,
allegory for sure,
I hate
and I
that.
don't like that. Yeah, I agree.
And then Snyder did the same thing. He just like made it up a new speech, but it was they will stumble, they will fall, but in time they will join you in the sun. Again, F you, Jor-El. Like so there's always they always give him this sort of colonial superiority complex with respect to the Earthlings for being so primitive. I've never liked it. And so this was just like making that just coming to the logical conclusion of the classic cinematic colonial depiction of Jor-El. Here's why I've always hated it. Because so much of the like discourse about Superman is supposed to be about how he's an immigrant. So he has to have something of value in Kryptonian culture to like make his identity hybrid. Otherwise, his hybridity is only about his body. Right? And that is the version that we got in this movie. There is actually no hybridity. There's nothing Kryptonian about him at all. He's completely American. And he has no connection to the Kryptonian past whatsoever, which I think might be a version of an immigrant story that a lot of people maybe can relate to if their parents like refuse to transmit anything of their culture to them and they grow up feeling disconnected from that past. But like that disturbs me if it's treated as a purely positive thing. Like there should be,
The which thing is the positive?
if it's treated as purely positive that
That he has
that you're
rejected his
100%
culture?
American and you have no connection whatsoever to where you came from.
Interesting. Well, I mean, but what if you're a person who is What if you're a person who is leaving a bad situation to become something else? Like in Clark's case, in Kal-El's case, I mean, there are children put on boats sent to America to save their lives. You know, it does happen.
So in the case
So,
of a refugee, right? Like there
like,
could
I've always heard more of that Superman's a refugee, less of an immigrant. That's more.
Well, it depends how the story is told, right? So often, for example, Jor-El is depicted as representative of a certain faction of Kryptonian
Yeah,
culture
the
that
guilds,
is in
yeah.
conflict
Right.
with a more militaristic faction, usually represented by Zod, right? And so then the refugee aspect has more in common with what we think of as real refugee stories, where typically people are being driven from their countries by some sort of conflict or by oppression. And typically, right, those people, although in a complex way, still belong to those places, right? The problem is that the places are currently going through some sort of political phase where they reject their belonging, right? But that's wrong. We reject that, right? So, like, you know, people were talking about this a lot recently because of the Mamdani campaign. But like, you know, Idi Amin expelled all the Indians from Uganda because he said that they couldn't be really African because they were originally from the Indian subcontinent. So like that's like a pretty common thing that happens in Europe with the Roma or with the Jews. And we reject that. We think, no, these people belong to these places, right? And so even if it's a refugee story, I don't like a completely or purely negative depiction of
The
Krypton.
place
So
in which he co from
yeah,
which he comes.
so then maybe they'll develop it further if they tell a Supergirl like story, but like I don't know, not with if his parents are like the bad ones, then there doesn't seem like there's much many places to go.
I know. That's what bothers me, because, like, I mean, unless there's the tape was doctored, you know, like they're
Right.
just there ha obviously they could go in any
They made
direction.
all the smart characters say it wasn't doctored, though.
I know, many times,
Yeah.
right? Like, that's the, like, yeah, maybe Bradley Cooper was just like, I'm not coming back, you get one shot, so just make me a heel. Yeah, I know. I like, we've talked about this before. I don't like when Thomas Wayne is tied to crime. I don't like when Jor-El is wants to dominate, wants his son to dominate the planet. I don't like when the origins of our heroes, I want them to be altruistic. And maybe I'm being naive, but it's a comic book, you know? Like, so like in my mind, Jor-El was the only one on that planet who knew the truth, and people wouldn't listen to him. He wanted to save the whole planet. He wanted to save everyone. And he was only able to, he had the prototype or whatever, you know, he only could save one. He couldn't even save his wife and himself. He could only save a little tiny room to save one tiny baby, and that's it, just his son. And then
And then his
whatever.
brother, who was on
And
who
then
was
his niece,
what's it
a
called, Kandor?
Kandor or whatever,
Yeah.
or yeah, yeah. And then the monkey and the
And
cat
the
and the
dog.
horse, yeah, the dog. And that was his purpose, was to save him. And if there are other implied things, fine. But I want Superman to come to the realization of wanting to help people from Pa and Ma, not from Jor-El, that Jor-El's only purpose was to save his son. That's what I want. So I'm not sure what the way out of this one is, if they don't want to, if they don't go that way. But
But they're giving you what you want. He learns to be a good person only from Pa and Ma.
yes, but what I'm saying is, I don't like that the origin of that is that his father was evil, you know, and you know, I mean, from their, you know, from our
So
perspective.
like here's a thing that I feel like it's a problem. It's a problem. Okay, I think this is a fundamental problem in the whole myth. Okay. So like, you know, we can talk about this because it's one of our favorite myths. But here's the problem. The reason that so many people, I think, are suspicious of Superman people who like the X-Men better, right? People who like Spider-Man better.
The people who are
People,
like, oh, Superman's so boring.
yes, all that stuff. Okay. It goes back to the early days of Marvel in the 60s, right? It goes back to the perception of Superman as a sort of father knows best, like sort of super cop type character who represents like blind patriotism and all of this stuff from the DC 50s era, right? But part of the reason, the sort of core of that suspicion is the heart of the myth, which is that the American heartland is a good place that makes good people, right? That's the heart of the myth. And that means that Ma and Pa Kent have always, in every version that we've ever seen, been just like good people. I don't think I've ever seen a version of Superman, not even in Elseworlds, right? At least that involved Ma and Pa Kent. So like Red Sun doesn't count, where they were bad parents, where they like were abusive, or where he had to rebel against them or something, or where they were racist, right? And the way that I feel about this is that like demographically, right, Ma and Pa Kent are in 1938 people who were born in the 1880s or 90s
Yes.
in Kansas.
Right.
They probably voted for Roosevelt in 32 and 36, and then they voted for Wendell Willkie in 1940 because Kansas was tired of FDR by then. And like, you know, they're Methodists and they're have like the standard attitudes of like people in that time. And I'm not saying there's like anything wrong with them being good people. I agree with you that it's in this myth, right, that they should be altruistic. But I'm thinking about how the John Ostrander series, The Kents, was the only thing I can think of that ever attempted to actually account for this. And Ostrander did a number of things. First, he tied it to actual American history, which is that Kansas was settled in the bloody, like, prelude to the Civil War by people who came from the Northeast to try to make it a free state, and then they fought a constant conflict with people who wanted it to be a slave state. And they like removed all the Indians from Kansas and forced them down into Oklahoma, right? So like he's like the only writer I think who's ever dealt with this. Like, what is Middle America? What is the role of Middle America in the myth? So if you tell a version of the myth where the Kents are purely good and the Kryptonians are bad, that ticks me off. Because I feel like there has to be some shade on both sides.
There's gotta be some nuance. For sure. I agree with you. All right, let's shift gears a few lighter things. Jimmy Olsen as kind of a ladies' man. Oh,
I
that
felt
was that like
sure.
the Matt Fraction Jimmy Olsen series,
I thought
like
that so it was like a definitely an allusion to like Silver Age, some Silver Age
Mr. Action.
fanfics.
He's Mr. Act.
Yeah, but like I also felt like so this is what I thought was going to happen in the post-credit scene. I thought they were going to come back to the Mrs. Pillick stuff and reveal that Mrs. Pillick was the one who was making all the women love Jimmy. Right? Like
That
it's unnatural.
would have been great.
Like, you know, we love Jimmy, but
He's kind of a loser.
it's weird that they all love him so much, that they're looking at him from across the room and so on. And so I thought it was funny that they played it for laughs, but like also explain it.
Like of all the things for like us just to understand this is who that character is, like I needed a little more when Lois is like, how do you do it, Jimmy? The implication being that he's always
Right,
got
and also but the fact that she's mystified means that he doesn't have some kind of obvious like social media reputation, for example, that would
girl.
explain it, right? Like she's like, how this woman's obsessed with you? Like, so I felt like it has to be magic. Well, maybe in the second movie we'll get Zatanna or like
Maybe,
something, and we'll learn that Jimmy has been doing a spell the whole time.
I really like that though. I really, it was like a nice, it was nice to see a Jimmy Olsen with red hair and freckles.
I
It
like that
was,
he had something to do,
he was
not just to be a
integral.
completely background character that's just like there for no reason, you know?
I really liked that Lois and Jimmy were not damsels in distress, not even once.
Yeah.
Like,
Lois saved him from
yeah.
that.
I mean, Lois, let's talk about Lois for a second. I mean, you said it, probably the best, like the most perfect depiction of Lois. You know, I went record on record on this very podcast saying that Bitsy Tulloch is my favorite Lois of all time, the greatest Lois of all time. I kind of gotta walk that back a little bit now because Rachel Brosnahan just suddenly stepped into the picture. Here's what I liked about Rachel Brosnahan that wasn't that So Bitsy Talek, I love that she was sincere, kind, a good mom, a great reporter, a loving person, but she was very serious all the time. She rarely had a joke. And that's not Bitsy's thing, I think, but Rich, like this Lois was funny. Like she like took a splash of the Margot Kidder stuff without the like meanness. Like she was never mean to Clark in this. I mean, obviously they're in a relationship, but
Well,
she was,
yeah.
but I like a Lois that challenges Clark slash Superman, but not as like a, I'm gonna figure out your identity. What's he hiding? Like Silver Age kind of.
Right.
So, I like a Lois that challenges Superman and Clark on who they are and who they are going to be to the world.
It would be now. I really want to see the beginning of the relationship
I
of
know.
this version
I
of
know.
Lois
Like,
and
when does he
Clark.
reveal it?
When does she figure it out?
She must have just figured it
Right.
out. Because he seems to not be very good at the both keeping the secret, which is a funny running gag. Because we make fun of that all the time on the shows. You know, like how Clark just tells everyone, Supergirl just tells everyone, and now they kind of made fun of it. So that was good. But yeah, did she just figure it out? He was like, you got me.
And I also want to know, like, when does she go from thinking, like, is this guy for real, to being like, oh my God, this guy is for real, right? Like, that's always a sort of a nice thing to see happen.
There's that thing, there's that bit in, it must either the pilot or the second episode of Lois and Clark, New Adventures of Superman, where she's like, where she realizes he's hot, because he's wearing an A shirt, and she's like, I don't get it. You eat like an 8-year-old, and your abs like Mr. Hardbody or something. So maybe that happened, like, because he looked pretty good in that shirt.
Yeah, so I would like to see that. I love the punk rock conversation, like, very
Hilaria.
much.
By the way, that was interesting bit of lore. I'm a punk rock kid from Bakerline. So Bakerline in the comics is, I think, the part of Metropolis where Suicide Slum is, and it's where the lower to middle class are from. And I think the implication was like I was a poor kid. So does that mean she isn't the daughter of an army
Sam
brat, Sam
Raimi.
Lanier, and didn't move
Well,
around, or just we'll get that
I mean,
later?
well, how she got the Secretary of Defense, like, on the phone,
Yeah.
right?
Well, I
So
think.
that to me implied that it wasn't just that she was a famous reporter,
Oh,
but that she had.
that's how I got from that it was just like Lois Lane's got everyone in her phone. She's that
Yeah,
Lois Lane.
maybe,
Yeah.
maybe.
But it didn't bother me, the punk rock kid from Bakerline. I like that.
I like the two because I really like the. I'm just such a sucker for. So I also went to a fair number of punk rock shows as a teenager. I wouldn't say that I, quote unquote, was a punk. I never wore the uniform, but that's because I very early on figured out that, like, the Ramones and, like, there were other bands, like, you could listen to and you didn't have to wear the uniform. But, like, it was always this. It's sort of like religion, right? Like, a lot of things are like religion, and you have your things, you have your Bob Dylan and wrestling and so on. But, like, it's the same thing in punk. There's, like, orthodoxy, and then there's, like, reform. And, like, if you're an orthodox punk, it means that you listen to Crass, and then you listen to all of these other bands that sound like Crass, and you dress by, like, putting patches on your clothes of, like, all of that stuff, and then you put the crap in your hair, and then you, like, go to the shows, and you, like, jump up and down, and, like, you dumpster dive, and, depending how far you take it, you, like, ride
Dumpster
the
dive or stage dive?
dumpster dive.
Dumpster dive.
Yeah, that's when you eat the food that's out of the dumpsters because you don't spend money, and, like, you, like, know when the places throw out the food, and you go and you, like, collect it, like, right from the dumpster, so you don't support capitalism and, like, all of that stuff. So anyway, the point, though, is that, like, it goes all the way back to the conflict between the Clash and the Sex Pistols, right? Where the Sex Pistols were basically, like, a boy band. They were put together by, like, a maven, like, manager with a plan to, like, make a popular group, right? And then the Clash were, like, completely politically earnest. And the Sex Pistols only had one album and they like disintegrated.
But they're back with a new lead, young lead singer. Did you hear about this?
No, okay, I don't
Yeah.
even want to know because
Oh, it's...
Johnny Rotten is like a Trump guy now and
Oh,
like whatever.
really? For
Yeah,
real?
but Sid Vicious like wore a swastika armband to like piss people off and be shocking. So like they were never like they were always just like offend your mom. Right, like piss
Gotcha.
off the queen, right?
Right.
And the Clash was like create a loving community of solidarity in an angry way, right? And so in some sense, I think that like in a very brief conversation, they like really got to this very deep question at the heart of punk rock, where he's like, "I'm punk rock," and she's like, "Your bands suck," but like clearly the message of the movie was that he is punk rock.
Right, that loving kindness is the
Yes.
new punk rock.
But no,
Yeah.
but I interpret it as being it was also the old punk rock.
Yeah. Okay.
So
Great.
like the Sex Pistols was never really punk rock. That was
Right.
like the whole they were just the aesthetic
Right.
without the beating heart.
Right. And but I think and I love how like Clark, just as an aside, is so earnest about the bands that he liked. Like even though the Mighty Crabjoys totally suck, like and like. He had a poster of them in his room. Like he's so sweet. Like she and she and that's the moment where she's. I think that's the moment where she's like, oh, I think realizes she loves him too. You know, and she's just like, oh, this guy really means it. He is for like you said. Is he? Are you for real? Like you are for real. Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was a great. That was a great conversation. Other tidbits. There's some great Easter eggs. Names of writers. Jurgen, there was East Jurgens Street and Ross Way and Wade Street.
Oh yeah, Peace on Earth was a huge
Oh yeah,
influence on this, clearly,
yes,
right? Yeah.
yes, yes.
So it was there was some Birthright, there was some Peace on Earth. I remember they said they were inspired by All Star Superman, but I didn't see any All Star Superman in
I
this
felt
movie.
like visually, also, like there's this way that Clark lumbers into the Daily Planet in the scene where he's like, excuse me, can we? And where he looks big and
Quite
he's
the
wearing,
art sort of
yeah,
thing.
and he's wearing the big blue suit with the
Okay, I see what
red
you mean.
tie. And he's kind of, it's like, that dude is huge, but he doesn't feel huge. And the way that, you know, did you ever see that quietly just the pencil drawing of showing basically the Reeve move of
When he
growth?
stands up straight,
Yeah.
yeah.
So
Okay, good point,
I
good
felt
point.
like, and I felt like Luther kind of visually felt like
Also,
that.
maybe the robots and some of the sort of Silver Age zaniness was taken from. I mean, that idea of overstuffedness, that's Morrison's style, is like just to throw one more thing at you. Like, there could have been an invasion of reptile creatures from the Earth's core. Like,
Then
and
fine.
then,
Yeah.
yeah,
That's
made
that he's
perfect
Superman's got to
sense.
deal with it. The Superman robots, the crypto stuff, like I loved how Superman in this saved a goddamn squirrel and then was crying over the loss of his robot dying in his arms. Like that's to me, that's a Superman that I can get behind, you know. Like that was great that, you know, Gary's dying and he's like losing it. You know, oh, there was a moment also, Sam, when I wanted to like kind of point at the screen and be like, that is acting. Speaking of corn sweat. So that scene, I think there was a great scene that I think was I'm so glad they took a long time for it, and that's the interview scene. I think like Lois Lane interviewing Superman, there's a long tradition of that in the comics, in the movies, obviously. It's probably the most famous scene in Superman the movie. Because of the whole long conversation they have, the Zoptic effect of him in one shot landing, turning into Clark, coming around, turning into Clark, all that stuff. There's a moment when Corin Sweat is standing there in the white shirt and the pants, no glasses, where he looks like Reeve in Superman 2 when Clark's in the fortress in that same outfit. I'm just like, I was like, oh, this guy is Superman. And it was like the moment when I stopped thinking that's David Corin Sweat playing Superman. And I was like, oh, this is Superman. And anyway, they're having that great conversation, and I loved this version of Lois Lane, like just nailing him, and he's not getting it. He's such a like, he's not media savvy. He like he's interrupting and everything, and then he very sincerely, with a quiver in his voice, screaming at her, "People were gonna die," and it's so sincere to me. And that was like another moment where I was like, Oh, that he really, that's all he cares about.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care about all that political stuff. He didn't go into, when Lois says, I would take a beat, I would think about it. He didn't do that. He just wants to stop people from dying, and that's the exact same as the squirrel and the robot. There's one nitpick part I had with that, and I know why they did it, but the murdering an innocent person in front of Superman's eyes really bothered me. I feel like I've never seen that before.
Who did
When they
that?
kill when Luther shoot was playing Russian roulette with Molly, and in front of Superman's eyes, and to me, Superman always saves the day in situations like that. If there's a situation of like you have to save this person or this person, Superman figures it out, like he did in this movie. He sent the Justice Gang to Jarnpur. I didn't like, I know why they did it, the emotional weight, and they made Molly like a cult hero, or whatever, but also like kind of fridging a person of color. I didn't really like that either. You know, a person who was like, you know, in the food service industry, like a person who like didn't matter to the grand scheme of things. Like, would it be, he says, even I have no family, you know, he selflessly gives a mouth. I get all that. I just didn't like seeing someone shot in the head, first of all, with my little child sitting next to me. That was too violent for this very comic booky movie, too real. And I just didn't like that Superman couldn't save him. I don't know. What did you think about? I said a lot there. What did you think about sort of the ethos of Superman only caring about saving human life and then not being able to in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He was sacrificed for the plot, and it did sort of violate the Superman always finds a way. I don't
You agree that that is a thing, that
Yeah.
Superman, no matter what, he finds a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but
Have you
clearly,
ever seen someone murdered in front of Superman's eyes like
no, but
that?
like, here's the thing is that one thing that they have, and this was like sort of part of the point of Peace on Earth, right? Is that like, if you agree that Superman gets to go home at night and go to bed, then somewhere someone dies that he can't save. So unless he's awake 24/7 and constantly flying around the Earth all the time, he actually can't save everyone.
Of course.
And there was a more distant example of that in this movie too, which was when Hawkgirl lets the
Oh,
dictator come to
I
his
didn't like that
death,
either. I hated that.
right? And so like clearly if Superman had been present, he would have caught him and like brought him to, you know, The Hague or
Yeah,
whatever,
exactly.
right? And so because he wasn't there, that guy died. And so
And
I
that guy
agree.
sort of deserved it. So I
But
think that's what we're, but yeah, I didn't
to me
like
it's
that.
just a matter of
Yeah.
distance,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's more disturbing that this person was killed directly in front of him.
And because he knew Superman, like I
Right.
understand why, but it's just like
But
it was a little
the
too dark for me.
yeah, that's fair. But it's like to me it's they're on a spectrum. Like that's the closest one, and then the dictator is the next closest one.
And then the person off
And then
camera,
the
we didn't
person off
say,
camera who just
but
like,
yeah,
you know.
walks into oncoming traffic in Paris.
Right, yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
right. Yeah. Yeah, I just though I it was like a little too. I almost wanted to like shield Judah's eyes, like that. I didn't think they were actually going to do it, and then like on the second bullet, and even Lex is surprised. And also that was weird. I didn't like that in all three show times I saw it. Like people laughed because that part was kind of played for comedy. How Lex is like, oh, I didn't think it was going to happen so fast, and people like chuckled. I was like, I didn't like that. So. I don't know. I guess I had more nitpicks than I thought, but I think it's time to give a grade, Professor Sam. What is your you've only seen it once, so on like first viewing, what's the grade?
I think the grade is A minus.
Wow, great. Yeah.
Which might make it my favorite Superman movie.
You know, Sam, it's interesting. So the other thing that Brandon said to me as we came out of the movie was we were in the bathroom and he said, this is the first great Superman movie in our lifetime. He actually said my lifetime, but we're a couple of years apart. And I was like, well, I was like, oh. And I was thinking like, well, I saw Superman 4, The Quest for Peace in the theater. I was six, but
That
that's
was
not a
not a
great
great
movie.
movie.
Right. I was born before Superman 3. not a great movie. I was like, oh my God. And then, of course, the whole Snyder mess. But
Right.
yeah, this is the first. What do you think about that statement?
That's absolutely true. The last great Superman movie before this was Superman 2,
Right.
1980,
1980. Yeah.
before I was born.
Yeah. Before I was born, too. So
So that's really something.
it's.
I mean, it's like I've never. It's always been a primary feature of my sort of Superman fandom that it was comics based and not movie based, right? And like I've often talked to people whose love of Superman comes from the movie,
Right. That's
and
that where you and I differ,
it
though.
always comes from one or two or
Right.
both,
Right.
right?
Right.
And never from any of the others.
No.
Although the fact that there are people in this world whose fandom comes from Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman and Justice League is like extremely weird to me, because to me that character is not Superman. So it's like
You mean those monkeys who are typing on
Well,
the
but it's like, the people who love the Christopher Reeve Superman, I'm like, it's not my Superman. I don't love those movies, but whatever. The character is Superman, recognizably Superman. And then there's this like, it's like there's these weird people whose favorite character is Ultraman. I mean, not really, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm not
Oh,
like,
you mean like the people who wear Joker t-shirts, like
right.
who love the Joker?
Yeah, like, or
Yeah.
people who put Punisher stickers on their
Yes.
cars and like, that's the world we live in where people think that Man of Steel is the best Superman
Right,
movie.
right.
So I'm glad that we actually have a good one now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm really excited to see what James Gunn is going to do next. Corn Sweat already said he is signed on for Superman 2. I think it's pretty foregone
I really
conclusion
hope
that.
they make it at Superman 2 and don't do some kind of like universe
And
thing for
make it
the one.
soon. Yeah, make it soon. Like, don't do. Remember when the franchises would come every 2 years, basically
Batman
would.
89 was followed by Batman Returns 2 years later.
Yeah. When Star Trek movies would come out, you know, 2 or 3 years apart. You know, like, just do it soon. So I think we're probably gonna see. I think they're gonna right a wrong from Supergirl 84, and I think we are gonna see a Superman cameo in the Supergirl movie. I think there was always an injustice that I think, you know, fans of the Reeve movies never got over, that the only shot of him was a poster in her room. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, so far, Gunn, I mean, I remember I said to you that he hasn't made a movie I didn't like yet, so this has continued.
I have so many feelings about like I would they have to do Brainiac Man.
I know.
Like it
It's
has to be. It's
time.
a rule of history.
Yeah. And you know, let's this is like, you know, when you have guests over for Shabbat and you're having your best conversations on the way out the door, you know, it's like, yes, they put Luther away. So, you know, it's always interesting, you know, in the comics, the Luther saga continued for years and years because at the end of the day, Luther had an excuse, had a way to prove where. You know, here, but here they got him. They got him in the last scene, and he went off to Belle Reve prison. So that means that either he's not in the next movie, and they'll have to do something, or he is, and Superman will need his help from the inside or something. You know, if it's a bigger something like
Or they
Brainiac,
could do the Brainiac Luthor team, which
yeah,
is
where
another
Brainiac gets
classic.
him out. Yeah, exactly. You get him in the purple suit. It's time for Brainiac. We've been waiting for an on-screen Brainiac for years and years. I think Mix Pidolex would be great too. You know.
I wouldn't mind if they did a magical thing. It's clearly James Gunn loves beating Superman up.
Oh
Like he took a
yeah.
beating in this
He
movie.
did. He
Like
did.
a real beating. And if they did a magic villain, then
Yeah.
he could take another
Yeah.
beating.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind if they did that, although
Silver
it's sort of a
Banshee.
weird second one, but like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Silver Banshees 2 C-list
Well, that
for
could be the opening scene, you know.
right.
There's clearly no problem having a bunch of shit in one movie.
Right.
So, and it kind of he kind of figured out that thing that the Batman movies over time did too much of, which like overstuffing it with villains. But like,
You know what would
yeah.
be fun is if they did a magic thing in like the opening sequence and then they like did a few normal beats before Brainiac showed up, and then somehow at the end of the movie there was a callback to the magic thing in the Brainiac fight. And Brainiac was like, "What the hell is this?" And they're like,
Yeah,
"Magic!
book
Take
it,
that."
book it. That would be great. Yeah, and I think you know, some more flashbacky world building stuff. You know, the stuff that we didn't see in this movie. I'd like to see more of that. But yeah, anyway, thank you, Sam.
Thank you for
This
having
is
me.
so fun. We
This
got
was
to do this
super
for
fun. Thanks for having
real.
me. I have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks for listening and watching. We'll see you next time. Yeah, Sam, I don't know when the next time we'll talk about Superman is, but
Probably when the Supergirl movie comes out.
there you go. There you go. All right. Thanks for listening. Our theme was composed and performed by Sam Bernstein. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss another thrilling adventure of Superman and Lois and Pals.
This is Bitsy Tulloch, and you are listening to Superman and Lois and Pals.